From the east side to the west, this is From the Land, the Cleveland Sports and More podcast. I'm your host, Jason Gerber, and tonight we are getting together for a bonus episode to preview the Cavs' 2023 playoffs opening round matchup with the New York Knicks. I am joined tonight by three of the best ever. My co-hosts, Phil Danko and Chuck Rambaldo, are here, and the show's ultimate guest, Matt Miller, is here as well. Fellas, the last time the Cavs hosted an opening round playoff series without LeBron James was 1996. They hosted the Knicks in a 4-5 matchup. Terrell Brandon was the Cavs' leading scorer, and the Cavs got swept 3-0 in the best-of-five series. So, how are you feeling in 2023?
Relative to that, way better than I was feeling in 1996. Relative to anything else, there's no way I'm feeling better right now than I was in 1996.
I haven't heard of the name Terrell Brandon probably since 1998, so that felt good, but I feel better about this team's chances.
Here we go. Miller?
Yeah, oddly enough, I name my nuts Terrell and Brandon, so I think about it quite frequently. But I think hopefully we're going to have a better outcome, no pun intended.
Oh, jeez, so bad.
Not even sure that was outcomes. I don't think that was a pun at all.
And it was definitely intended, so I don't know what to actually say.
All right, let's move as quickly as we can away from that. Start talking about the Cavs and the Knicks. The series starts on Saturday night in Cleveland. And let's start our look at the series with a dive into some stats. So I looked back at the last 20 games of the regular season for the Cavs and the Knicks. And I'd like you guys to tell me which of these stats you think provides the best insight into what's going to go down in this series. First one, the team's records. Knicks were 14-6, Cavs were 13-7 in their last 20. During those games, the Knicks' offensive rating was 121.8, Cavs was 118.7. Next one, the defensive ratings during those 20 games. Knicks were 117.8, Cavs were 113.3. And even though I don't know what these ratings numbers really mean, I do know that a lower defensive rating is good. Last one, Knicks versus the Cavs this season. Knicks won the season series 3-1. Kevin Love had 29 in the Cavs' single win against the Knicks this year. Jarrett Allen only played in one of the losses to the Knicks. So of all those numbers, stats, which one do you think is going to give us the most insight into what may happen during this series?
I could probably eliminate the Kevin Love stat because he's not on the roster. I guess I'll focus like you. I don't understand them, but I'll go with the defensive rating if it's better than theirs, because these teams are a lot alike and the offensive numbers were kind of there. And you might get into it a little more about, you know, when they played them, who was on the floor and who wasn't. So I'll focus on the defense stuff just because I'll cliche it here. I don't know if defense wins championships in the NBA, but the Cavs have played pretty well all season long, so hopefully it carries over.
To me, it's got to be the record against the team that they're playing. The other two are against, you know, sort of an average based on things that they've done against everybody on their records. And they're not playing everybody in the record. They're just playing each other. So even though there's some matchup differences, that's also the stat that worries me the most. Is the 3-1 record against the Knicks. But to me, that's the only true outcome that we have based on the people that are going to be playing this week.
By far the most lucid and rational answer we've ever gotten from Miller on this show. I'm shocked right now.
Can we give him more time with the Miller high life? Like maybe we've not given him enough time.
Did we rush you into this, Miller? Do you need some more time to drink before we get going?
I don't know if it was a purposeful stat or an inadvertent stat, but the stat I'm going to lean on is the Jared Allen. He only played one game. And that's the guy against this Knicks team, because one of their most prolific scorers, if he's healthy and he hasn't been cleared yet, is Julius Randle. And I think you need a guy like Jared Allen that can pretty much play defense all over the court on a big that can score from all over the court. So Jared Allen's ready to go. That's my stat that I'm going to focus on in this series.
I looked around and couldn't find any updates tonight on whether or not Randle is going to play. seems like what the news is that he'll play at some point in the series, but he might not be ready this weekend. So I don't think they're expecting him to play in game one.
He's moving around, but he hasn't had contact yet. That's what I read today.
Boy, Miller, you just teed yourself up perfectly for something with that one. I'm going to pull a Denko, and I'm going to say it's all of them. Because I think what I look at when I look through all of this stuff about these teams is they're ridiculously evenly matched. Like I think they're different teams. I think their playing style is different. But in the end, the records are similar. The ratings are similar. I understand the Knicks won the season series, but especially at the end, they played that last game, I think, against the Knicks without Okoro or Allen. And that's, I mean, come on. Like you can't judge the Cavs in a game like that when they're missing two of their really key pieces, and two of their starters. I think it's all of them. I think we are in for, and I don't think I'm giving anybody a hot take here. I feel like everybody kind of looks at this series and says, this is the best series of the first round. This is the series that's going to be the most fun, I think, for obviously for Cavs fans and Knicks fans, but for basketball fans in general. Can't talk Cavs or playoffs without talking Donovan Mitchell. So give me your one word hot take on Donovan Mitchell's first season with the Cavs.
One word hot take. Good.
Superstar.
Wow.
All right. That's not bad. I'm going to go with everything because I think Donovan Mitchell is everything we expected him to be and probably more this season. We're not going to talk that much about Donovan Mitchell tonight because I think it's the low-hanging fruit to say that dude's got to be absolutely awesome for the Cavs to win this series. We will talk about a lot of the other players, and we're going to try something new tonight. This is you be the man. I want you to pretend you are this player, and then I want you to tell us what you need to do in order for the Cavs to win the series.
Can I be Hot Rod Williams?
You cannot. You absolutely cannot. Miller, we're going to start with you. I want you to be Evan Mobley. So as Evan Mobley, what do you need to do in order for the Cavs to win this series?
Dominant. A bully. Big balls. Show up. Play strong. Play hard. Play like he has in the second half. Be aggressive. Play great defense like he usually does. Consistent defense and aggressive offense.
I like that you went with he, like you're Evan Mobley talking in the third person. That's fantastic. I'm going to give you like a 6 because I think your point is very good. I think that's the Evan Mobley we need to see. But he's a really soft-spoken, like low-talking guy. And so I don't think you did his voice real well. Phil, you're Jetty Osman. What does he need to do for the Cavs to win this series?
Ride the bike consistently. I'm just going to keep riding the bike on the because in that moment that they point to me, I'm going out there and I'm going to give them the best 3 minutes of my life before they call me back to the bench. And in those 3 minutes, I'm going to score 6 points and get 2 boards.
I'm going to give you like a 4. I have a feeling Jetty's playing a lot of minutes and he's also from Turkey. And yeah, you had no attempt at all at the accent, which is pretty disappointing.
Is this on again, a scale of like, 6? Like, did I keep?
No, it's 10. It's 10.
Again, it's 10. You know, the lack of instruction aside, the fact that there's no way I can do a Turkish accent.
Oh, you could give it a shot. I'm could try.
Leave that alone.
That's a spicy meatball made of falafel. Yeah,
that's Turkish. That's close enough.
Chuck? Caris LeVert.
I was nervous because you were trending downward when you went to Dicko and Jetty, but LeVert's it's a good one. What do I need to do? Be the impactful two-way player I've been since March, coming off the bench, continue to hit threes when I need to, continue to rebound, and believe that the best move the Cavs made this year was keeping me and not trading me at the deadline. And that's probably about it. Be the spark I need to be. And the minutes, maximize them, but ultimately just fill that role that I have got really comfortable in, abandoning that mid-range shot and mostly focusing on 3 and D.
That's an 8. You sounded just like him. Yes. And those were all like
excellent.
Really good points that you made. All right. So last one is me.
Wait, who are you? Yeah. Do we get to pick one for you? Yeah.
Raul Neto. Tell me your Neto.
Danny Green. JB Bickerstaff.
Mama Dikembe.
I don't think Mamadi Diakite made the playoff roster, but probably not. I'm going with Dean Wade.
Oh boy.
So here we go. I'm gonna do my best to rebound and make my three pointers. All I need to do is when they put me in the game, grab rebounds and make three pointers.
All right, so, Shaq.
Now wait 1 second. So before Kansas you give session? Me your scores, have any of you ever heard Dean Wade talk?
No.
All right, so you don't know if I'm right or I'm wrong.
I felt go like ahead. That was
Miller,
shocked, though.
Miller, what do you give me on my Dean Wade impression?
I'm going to give you a 7 for effort because at least you tried.
All right, we're going to move on from that. I think the most important thing Dean Wade can do is just get rebounds. Just get rebounds. That's what we need from Dean Wade. As we get into this a little bit deeper, we're going to see that that's an issue for the Cavs when it comes to the Knicks. Moving on, let's talk a little Isaac Okoro. It looks like he is going to be available to play starting in game one. He has not played since March 26th. And so by Saturday night, it'll be almost a full 3 weeks he missed because of what must have been a really serious teres major in his knee. Miller hasn't listened to last week's episode yet.
Not yet. I'm halfway through the week before.
What is a fair expectation for Isaac Okoro coming back in this series?
Fair expectation. I actually think he was rested on an injury that, all right, if the playoffs had started, he wouldn't have been rested, I don't think. So the fair expectation is energy. I don't need that guy to score double digits. I need that guy to play defense, force turnovers, get, you know, 5 rebounds, maybe score 5 points, but be energy, be the starting version of Caris LeVert. Because when Okoro goes to the bench and LeVert comes in, we got the same kind of player out there with the rest of our scorers.
What Okoro do you think we're getting after this layoff? Are we getting Okoro in December or are we getting Okoro in March and April?
I think you're getting Okoro in March and April, a guy who grew up and filled a really good role and showed like, in 2 very big games that the moment wasn't too big for him. Now, I'm not expecting him to hit that game-winning 3, but I'm expecting him to pester defensively whoever his assignment is and whatever his switches are. Just be, like Phil said, energy is the perfect word. That guy is the hockey equivalent of like a fourth liner who comes out and just creates havoc, but he's doing it as part of the starting 5. I think you see the guy that we saw in March and April.
How important do you think it is that we get that Okoro that Phil and Chuck are talking about, the athletic 3-and-D guy that we've hoped he would be all year?
To me, the 3 part is a nice added bonus. It'll be the cherry on top of a well-frosted cupcake if he plays good defense. Because defense is effort-based. It's not streaky. It doesn't rely on anything other than his willingness to try it, and it can help disrupt some of the offensive flow for the Knicks, which would be key for us to win. So if he does that, if he puts in the effort and he's healthy enough to do it, then that's all we really need from him. We've got a 3-headed monster, really a 4-headed monster at that position. One of them, as long as they make a couple baskets. But let's be honest, this is the playoffs. 95% of the offense is going through, Jesus Christ, what's his
Mitchell,
name?
Mitchell.
It's going Mobley. Through Mitchell.
Let's be honest, 95% of the offense is going through this guy whose name I can't remember.
Not a good sign.
Somehow we rushed Miller before he got too much high life, and now we're at a point where he's had too much already. A wild night already, Miller.
Terrell and Brandon were a little itchy. I got distracted.
So am I gathering from what you're saying, Miller, you don't think the offensive side of what Okoro is going to provide is really the key? It's like we just need the defensive guy and let Mitchell, Garland, and Mobley do their thing?
Playoff Mitchell's going to go for 35 to 50 points, but he's probably not going to be able to exert the same amount of energy on defense. We need Okoro to be able to step in there, or whoever's playing the 3 to be able to be a defensive disruptor to provide the same amount of energy on that side of the ball. So to me, that's the offense slows down in the playoffs. It becomes a lot of one-on-one. Okoro's not going to be a one-on-one guy. He's a fast breaker, and occasionally he'll hit a 3 from the corner. He's got his spot, but there's not going to be as much of that. In a playoff game like this, it's going to be a lot of Mitchell and Garland breaking down and trying to do picks and get themselves and Mobley in ideal situations, getting the weaker defender on them and then taking them to the hoop or trying to shoot a three-pointer. So Okoro doesn't factor into that as much, except for rebounding, setting picks, and playing good defense.
I would agree 1,000% that it's going to slow down. The Cavs are like the slowest team in the NBA. Do the Cavs have an advantage in this series and in the playoffs in general because they've played an entire season of half-court focused basketball?
I sure hope so. I think we always felt watching the team this year that it wasn't like other teams in the past where they were constantly focusing on defense throughout the season, where a lot of teams kind of took most of the regular season off and then kind of turn it on. At least that's what it's been the past couple of years. That is their biggest advantage, that they've always seemed like a defense first team and a defensive minded team. And the slower they play, usually the better they play. You saw them getting a few track meets over the last third of the season, and they typically lost those games. They should control the pace in this series and play the game that has been so successful for them this season.
Yeah, I think we saw it in the last time these two teams matched up, is that became a bit of a track meet. There wasn't a whole lot of half court sets run in that game, and it was you know, fast break after fast break. And I think the Cavs scored 120 points in that game and lost by 14 or something ridiculous, right? So if it does slow down, it does kind of, I think it favors the Cavaliers because their offense has been playing that way through the season for the most part. I want to see it slow down. I'd rather take our offensive talent on a half court set versus the Knicks than start running all over the court.
Definitely is an advantage. I think what Miller's saying is right. Like, we're going to slow the game down. There's going to be more isolation, although I don't think it has to be. We're going to get to that in a little bit. The Cavs are really good when they get into that half court set and they move the ball and they create opportunities and mismatches especially for Mobley and Allen. And if we can get more of that than running up and down the court, I think that bodes well for the Cavs. Let's move on and let's talk a little bit about the Knicks and maybe where there might be an issue. The Knicks bench includes Emmanuel Quickley, who averages 14 points, 4 boards, and 3 assists a game. Josh Hart, who averages 10 points and 8 boards a game. Isaiah Hartenstein, 5 points, 6.5 rebounds. Dayton's own Obi Toppin, 7 points and 2 rebounds. And frankly, the guy's way better than I think those numbers indicate. Scale of 1 to 5. 1 being the Gerber-led Phillips Osborne School 8th grade hoops team. 5 being the Miller-Shantz Bonhard St. Helens 8th grade team. How confident are you in the Cavs bench matching up with the Knicks?
I'm going to go somewhere about a 2 in that. That is an area of concern for me. The bench isn't going to play nearly as much, but I think the Knicks have a more impactful bench that's at least more consistently impactful. We have some streaky players on the bench, which potentially in a short series could do just fine. I think over the long haul, the playoffs, though, I'd be surprised if they're able to sustain it. So short answer, Knicks, 3, 2, 2.5.
Yeah, I was thinking 2 when you said that. I'm a little bit worried about that. The Knicks bench has some depth and they have the correct size players in the right positions coming off their bench, whereas the Cavs have a bunch of guards coming off their bench, basically, right? Like, it's even Jetty is he's a 3 maybe, but kind of a 2-3. So I think what we'll see, though, is, you know, Bickerstaff's not going to run a deep bench, and you might see, you got to leave one of our bigs out there at times, right? So it's either Allen or Mobley with guys like Rubio and LeVert. So that might help, because that'll slow down on Obi Toppin or some of those other guys coming off the Knicks bench. But that is certainly an area of concern.
I'll go farther down the trough and more towards your leading that team.
Offensive. Yeah. You guys all misunderstood the scale.
Oh, the 5 was the worst or the 1s?
No, I'm just kidding. No.
I'll probably put it at 1.5, only because I don't know how much time those guys are going to get. Playoffs tighten up, but hearing those stat numbers, man, it'd be nice to have one of those guys on this Cavs bench to play. The team is real. That team plays like the Cavs. They're real gritty too, defensively. And that's probably the biggest concern that everybody's kind of talking about, at least right now, is that those guys come off the bench fresh and they could play. And you got guys who are putting in some serious minutes. And I don't know how I feel about Rubio out there, or Wade out there, or Jetty out there. LeVert, I trust. But other than that, it's more towards a 1.5. But I guess I reserve the right to watch game one and see just how much time anybody's getting on the floor other than the starting fives.
Yeah, I'm definitely at the Phillips Osborne end of the scale for this, because I'm worried about it too. And like that Miller, Shantz, Bonhart, St. Helens team, that's like the best eighth grade team anybody's ever played on until LeBron was on an eighth grade team. Yeah, exactly.
Big three, like before the big three. Yeah.
The dream team of local Northeast Ohio small religious school basketball in the early 90s, man.
We lost to the school my kids now go to.
Okay. There's some real talent on this Knicks bench that I just don't think the Cavs can match. And when we do a requiem on this season, whenever that comes, I think we're going to look at the bench and say that's what needs to get improved for next year. We'll see what happens. I understand it's going to be a short bench, but the flip side of that is how many rounds of the playoffs can the Cavs go playing all of their starters 42 minutes a game? You know, I mean, it's just, it's not sustainable. And that, I think that's a worry for the Cavs. But Emmanuel Quickley, Josh Hart, Isaiah Hartenstein, Obi Toppin, scale of 1 to 5, 1 being Draymond Green, 5 being Joakim Noah. Which of these guys are you going to hate the most by the end of the series?
I can't say Obi, right? I can't say Obi Toppin, flyer like myself. So I think Quickley, I don't know why. I think that dude is, I don't know who the Cavs have to Isaiah Quickley. I'm going to hate that guy. He has an awesome name. I'm going to hate it.
Finkelstein or Frankenstein, whichever one. It's already an annoying last name. That's the guy I don't like.
Yeah, I'm going with Quickley too. If I remember correctly, he's just sort of like instant offense. You know, that disrupts a long, hard fought defensive stand where he brings somebody and he puts up 10 points in about 5 minutes.
I'm going with Hartenstein too. I think that guy is going to get offensive rebounds in really annoying situations. I think he's going to get baskets when he doesn't look like a guy who should get any baskets. And I think it's going to drive me nuts.
Wasn't he on the Cavs at one point? Am I thinking of some? There was a guy with a similar name like 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
No, I don't think he's that old. I think he's young still. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Whether or not he was on the Cavs isn't going to change how much I hate him by the end of this series. I think he's going to be an annoying guy. As you think about the series as a whole, what is the thing you want to see happen the least as these games play out during the series?
I guess, given the way these teams play, it's a super close game in the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. Not that I don't think we could pull it off. It's just there's a lot of learning curve for this Cavs team other than Donovan Mitchell. Because he has some experience and Danny Green has some experience and that's it. I'm worried about the close, like playoff pressure, last 2 minutes of the game. None of these guys have any experience in a playoff series. Maybe they prove me wrong and they come out on top and that's the experience we need. But that gives me some worry going into this series anyway.
I worry most about the isolation and hero ball and not involving the bigs for the Cavs. That is when they are at their best, when you are involving Allen and Mobley in that offense and not just clearing it out for whoever. It's great that Donovan Mitchell scores 40 plus points, but that's not going to win this series. So involving the bigs is probably the thing that worries me the most if they don't do that.
The thing that worries me the most is the potential we could actually get blown out in 3 games pretty quickly, because there's not as many lessons learned in that. It's just embarrassing and soul crushing. I think if it's a hard-fought series, regardless of who wins. We get a couple, they get a couple, or they're all really close, then I think the guys in the Cavs, other than Mitchell, are going to learn some stuff that they can take forward to next season. But if they get blown out, that's just sort of soul-crushing, I think puts a pause in their development. Also, Isaiah Hartenstein did play for the Cavs in 2021. We traded him to the Clippers.
Wow.
Excellent.
It's so great to have the stat department on with us for, yeah. For this. This is fantastic, Miller. Nice
guy's
work.
Working hard.
I don't necessarily see a blowout. You know, I don't see the Cavs getting swept in four games and a seven game series. Just don't see that happening. These teams are too evenly matched for that. And we get to play at home where we've been awesome all season long. It's that isolation. Everybody stops moving, and just whoever has the ball, whether it's Mitchell or Garland or LeVert, they just dribble around until there's 5 seconds left on the shot clock, and they got to try to create something. This offense works the best when they're passing the ball crisply and people are moving and they're creating mismatches that way. And that can happen in a half court. We see it. We've seen it all the time this season. I worry that especially an inexperienced team with a dominant guy like Mitchell, who is going to take over when he wants to. If he thinks the team needs him to take over, he's going to do it. I just worry that it's going to be too much of that. That's the thing I want to see the least. Just move the ball, pass, get everybody involved. That's the key, I think, to win in these games. Other than Donovan Mitchell, who I think we all expect to be awesome, who has to have a great series for the Cavs to win?
Darius Garland will probably be the deciding factor in the series. It's a guy who, I'll go back to the bigs, he likes to get the bigs involved. Garland, Mobley, and Allen only played 26 minutes together against them, the Knicks, and they outscored them by 19 in like 20-some minutes. That bodes well. But they also, the Knicks, forced Garland to take really bad shots in certain games. This is a guy whose role changed dramatically this year when Donovan Mitchell came in, but he had an even more efficiently better season offensively. We take him for granted because of Donovan Mitchell this year. So I think he's the deciding factor here because you know he's going to get the bigs involved, and that's the way you win this series.
I'm going to go with Caris LeVert because I think he's the most reliable option we have off the bench. And I think one of the things where we were just talking about is it's the bench discrepancy could be our downfall. So his ability to hopefully pick up the slack for the bench and lead the charge and be some instant offense plus provide defense and frustrate some of the Knicks could be a key factor in whether or not we get out of this thing positively.
I'm going to say Evan Mobley. I think this guy is probably the most talented player on the floor, and he might not know it yet, and he's really young. And I don't need him to grow up in one playoff series, but here you go, right? Like, this guy is – he could be the difference in this series, and we need him to be a double-double machine. You know, he doesn't have to score 30, but if he's getting 10 rebounds and 20 points a game, I don't know that the Knicks have a good matchup for that while we have Allen on the floor also getting his double-double, but it's more like 10 and 10, you know? So I think Evan Mobley, because I agree with what you guys said, I think, you know, the guard play is going to – that's going to kind of drive this offense. But if Evan Mobley has a good series, we take it. We take it for sure.
All really good answers. I don't think you can argue with any of those. I look at Mobley a little bit the way maybe we looked at Kyrie in 2015. When LeBron had come back and they were making their first run, like, it felt like maybe not everybody knew how good he was. And it was like a coming out party in the playoffs for him that year. Now, he's obviously at that point, he was a little bit more advanced than Mobley is now, but I feel like that could be coming for Mobley. Like that same kind of coming out party, like everybody watching these games on national television, see what this guy does, play in and play out. It's amazing. But I think I'm with Miller that I think it's LeVert. I think our starters are better than the Knicks starters, but our bench is so weak that it becomes a problem. And so you need LeVert to really step up and be the good LeVert that we've seen the last couple of months. Make your threes, play a bunch of defense, play make in a way that we hadn't really seen him do before, getting the ball to other people. I think LeVert's the key. Mobley's going to be great. I think Garland's going to be great. I think Mitchell's going to do his thing. The key to me, I think, is that if LeVert plays great, the Cavs win this series. I think he's really the guy. So why don't we get to it? Put our money where our mouths are. Series prediction. Who is winning this series and in how many games?
Cavs in seven. Wait a second. Cavs, it's only a five-game series, isn't it?
No, it's a seven.
It's a seven.
Yeah. You're like 4 years behind. Don't worry about it.
Cavs in seven.
I don't think New York has the personnel to completely cut off the paint from our bigs. I think it's Cavs in six. Is that possible? Five. I'll go five. I can't do the math.
All of it's possible.
Right now, it's Cavs and four is possible. The only thing that's not possible is Miller's earlier prediction of Knicks and three. We're all kind of in the same place. I think it's Cavs and seven. I think this is a really evenly matched series. I love the fact that we get home court advantage and we get a game seven in Cleveland. And I think it's going that far. I think this is going to be a fight every single game. And I hope that that learning experience that Miller was talking about earlier in the show comes through for these guys. Because I think there's definitely a lot of opportunities for the Cavs to learn and grow in this series. And I think they can win it. So that would be the best of both worlds. Obviously, that's what we're pulling for. Game one on Saturday. This is going to be a lot of fun. But boys, we're out of time. I am out of questions for now. And we just did the whole show without mentioning that during that 1996 series against the Knicks, Danny Ferry was second on the Cavs in minutes. With that reminder that maybe starting five depth is more important than bench depth, I hope you guys have a great weekend. And let's get back together and do this again after the Cavs kick the shit out of the New York Knicks.
Absolutely.
So I told him about Vaca Beach when, you know, we had baseball practice. So he has a friend named Burke whose parents are out of town. So they've been spending a lot of time at Burke's house in between practices.
Like awesome. How are their times in that afternoon session?
A little bit. He had a crappy practice yesterday, so I don't know what was that. All I know is about Burke's house is he said that the pantry where they keep their snacks is the same room the toilet's in. Oh. One of his friends took a giant shit as they were trying to go in there and get Powerade and granola bars. My hope is there is an actual toilet in there.
Wow. Well, I don't like the design. I do respect the kid's game of knowing, like, hey, you know what would be a great idea? Take a huge shit in here right before everybody comes in to get a snack. That's pretty good.
I love that he's got a friend called
Burke. He's got a Burke.
Everyone, awesome. Everybody got a Burke.
Everybody should have a Burke. Yeah.
Yeah. We should have a Burke.
We really should.
Yeah.
How much time are we giving him? We doing college rules 15 minutes and we can.
He's back in his basement by now, right?
I don't know. Is he coaching? Is that what the practice he was talking about? Or is he playing something? Is Burke on a team now? He's got to practice on Thursday nights.
Maybe.
Designated hitter.
Cavs or playoffs without talking Donovan Mitchell. So one word hot take on. Is anybody else hearing me talk right now?
Yeah.
I hear you.
Yeah.
Are you hearing yourself talk? I'm hearing somebody else. I think I'm hearing myself on somebody else's speaker.
You might be hearing a TV. Like this mic picks up. I can hear what's going, even though the volume's at like three, I can hear the TV.
Okay.
Is that what you're hearing?
I don't know. We'll see. I know Miller, you're not using headphones, right?
I'm not.
Oh,
I also don't have a TV on, but it could be you.
So you might be picking up Gerber's voice.
I think I'm picking up me on Miller's laptop.
Gotcha. I'm trying to find some.
Don't worry about it.
I can find something.
I'm definitely hearing. Yeah, I hear it every time now.
Yeah, go ahead, man. We're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
All right. Give me a second.
Hold the string 40s. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Steal something from the kids.
I should have bought two of them.
Oh, God.
No, I should not. So my 40 dealer, I've never seen this before. They now have two rows of 40s. In their low, it's like yours, Gerbs. Like it's the lower corner of a forgotten about cooler, right? And it's a whole row of old English and a whole row of Steel Reserve. that's all I get.
Just talking to my beer buddies, like the people who work for distributors.
Beer buddies?
I do. Like a lot of them.
Beer buddies.
Well, I mean, that's their livelihood. Their family distributes for the entire region. And I was talking to them about, you know, like Natty Light and stuff like that. And they're like, you need to get Busch Light. I'm excellent. I do. That's what I've been drinking lately, or the cans when we do the show. And they said, like, because of COVID, what they found is that quantity trumped quality. So like Busch Light and Natty Light sales are insane. So much so now that the bars are kind of back, that they're starting to put Busch Light on tap in Erie because it's being requested that much.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. God, awesome.
Fucking COVID changing the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Miller's landing a helicopter. Jesus.
God, right. I wish I could think of the names of one of the dudes who were in Airwolf, and I can't.
Bubba Smith was in Airwolf.
No, he was in Blue Thunder.
He was in Blue Thunder. You're right.
Blue Thunder.
Airwolf. Yeah, I don't know those guys' names.
All right. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
You actually sound way better, man. Please work here.
Can I land yet, Miller?
Boy.
Running out of fuel.
Am I the only one that thinks of that calls pulling a Danko when I jerk off after I've shaved off my pubes?
No, I call it that too.
Yes. You know, well, the two of you, something to discuss on your next wing night.
Yeah.
Jan Michael Vincent was a
Jan Michael Vincent. Yeah, Errol,
I think was his name. Stringfellow Hawker, is that his real name?
Hawk might have been his name, and then wasn't like there was like an old white guy who just died recently. Ernest Borgnine was the co-pilot on Airwolf.
So I watched both shows growing up. When I was little, I preferred Blue Thunder, which I think is the minority.
Thunder. Yeah.
I think I was an Airwolf guy.
I was Airwolf.
Yeah, I like them both.
Airwolf, you can just do so much more. Now I think Blue Thunder the movie. Blue Thunder was a movie too. That was pretty good.
They have Lou Gossett Jr. in it.
No, that was like the Iron Eagle.
Iron Eagle was great. They made like four Iron Eagles.
Yeah, they did. Yeah,
there's a lot of them.
They were ahead of the curve. Top Gun took them 30 years to make two movies. Exactly.
All right, so we're moving along nicely with way more outtakes than we have actual show.
Fantastic.
Yeah, all three of you. All right. Miller, it's always so great to fucking have you, man. Yeah, like, man. It's so much fun.
Really good on this, Miller. We need you more often, man. Like, you do a great job.
The time and the audio, I'll get figured out at some point in time. But
you sound perfect right now. Yeah, you sound fucking perfect. Keep those headphones.
Headphones. Yeah, we're good. Yeah.
I used to go digging through my son's bedroom, which is always a.
No, don't. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah.
Don't find anything fucking weird. I'd have to do
Asian babes.
Podcast. Just... Did you say Asian babes?
Yeah, he did. All right, enough. You guys have a great night. I'll put this out sometime tomorrow. And Miller, if you want to join us on Sunday, man, the invite's always open, brother. Just let us know.
This Sunday I probably can't do because I'll have all the kids back in the house and their spring break was basically spent either exercising or at my parents' house being yelled at. So I'm gonna try to do something spring breaky with them on Saturday or Sunday.
Okay.
But in the future, sometime soon. Plus I'm four seasons behind on Succession, but
yeah.
Catch give up. Me a minute.
Just don't listen to anything we say about Succession. Don't skip that part. Don't listen to the episodes, whatever the fuck, and start watching it. It's going to be worth it. It's going to be worth it. All right.
We'll do.
Enough. Right, we're not talking about something new, Phil. I'm out of here. I love you guys. You're the best.
I love you guys. Good night. Good night.
Toodles.
'm funny like a clown here to amuse you.